Senate Finance and Claims will come to order. Jason would take the roll, please.
Vice Chair Glimm.
Here.
Vice Chair Ellis.
Here.
Senator Solomon.
Here.
Senator McGilvery.
Here.
Senator Boldman.
Here.
Senator Bartel.
Here.
Senator Mandeville.
Here.
Senator Morjo.
Excused.
Senator Lenz.
Here.
Senator Lang.
Excused.
Senator Lynch.
Excused.
Senator Bogner.
Here.
Senator Cuff.
Excused.
Senator Flowers.
Excused.
Senator Fuller. Here. Senator Vance. Here. Senator Pope. Here. Senator Wellborn.
Excused.
Chair Esp.
Here. Thank you. We have a quorum. We're going to hear a few bills this morning. Mr. Treem, would you go over the item that was left in our spot, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, there's an envelope in front of you, actually two envelopes, and what they are is our attempt to get your evaluation responses of the staff that served you in the subcommittee process. So there's one envelope that includes as many forms as were the individuals assigned to your subcommittee. For example, in Section E, you'll have four. If you're in Section A, you'll have three. It'll be for each individual who helped you during subcommittee. It has a few simple questions and just allows us to have feedback, because what we use this for is kind of a forward-looking way to look at our staff, what we can do for training, what they did well for you, what you would like them to do in a different way later. It is very important for us to get your honest opinion on this, because we do make staff decisions on, you know, the various elements of moving people to where they have a better fit, where they should be within our organization, et cetera. So if you would please do that. And then the second envelope is just blank, so it allows you, when you get those evaluations done, just slip them in the second envelope, seal it up, and just either drop it off in my office or you can bring it to me up here. It doesn't have to be done right now, but over the next few days, if you'd please do it while you can, and just drop it off in our office anywhere you want. And I would like to secondly thank the committee for all of your help helping us with House Bill 2. House Bill 2 is a big lift. When you see the committee report, you'll see how big that is and how big of a lift it was. So we do appreciate your patience with us. There was a few times we had to go and redo a few things that were technically done in a different way than they should have been, and then putting things together, the time it involves for us to turn things around. There was a lot of patience on your part, and I do want to call out the staff, that a lot of which you did not see in the room that were behind the scenes, including the editors who last night were working into the wee hours of the night to get the committee report out. So I'd like to call them out and thank them for their help on this. We don't see them in here. You just see a few of them in subcommittee and a lot of others behind the scenes, but I wanted to thank them for all their work helping us get this across the finish line.
Thank you, Mr. Treeman. I would echo that. We were down there several times, and they're all scrambling trying to get things ready for us, and so we do appreciate our staff. We're going to hear House Bill 5 in a moment. I will tell those of you in the room and online to shut your phones off, sign in the outside the back door there if you plan on testifying. I am going to mention before you start, Representative Hopkins, that I have an amendment prepared that hasn't gone to editing yet, but it removes the transfer from the petroleum tank release fund and replaces it with general fund. So if you're here to testify about that, just be brief, because we understand the issue and we're taking care of it. With that being said, Representative Hopkins, you can open on House Bill 5. I think there's a button on the side there, should be. Representative Hopkins, if you'd like to, you could sit down. We'll get some techies up here to help fix that mic for us. Representative Hopkins. You got to push the button there. Oh. No, we got technical problems, Jason. We're going to have to get the... Well, we need it on the record. I think there's something unhooked there someplace. Let's just stand at ease for a moment till we get something figured out, because we have a whole bunch of people to testify to. Stand at ease.
Mr. Chair, somebody's coming up to fix this.
Great. Thank you.
That worked. Try yours.
Here we go.
Check test 1, 2.
You can tip me later. Done.
Hi, Mr. Chairman, from the top, never turning down an opportunity to be at a podium. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good morning. Mike Hopkins, HOPKINS, representative for House District 92 out of Missoula, bringing you here now for your consideration the final piece, at least official final piece, of the work of the Section F long-range planning subcommittee. House Bill 5, Mr. Chairman, is the long-range building program. So whereas with House Bill 10, we were talking about digital infrastructure, in House Bill 5, we are talking about physical infrastructure. We are talking about specifically state-owned physical infrastructure throughout the state of Montana. Mr. Chairman, House Bill 5 has a primary funding source for its regular dollars. That is primarily made up of coal severance tax dollars. It also includes a little bit of cigarette tax dollars. It includes, this time around, I believe, about $3.7 million worth of energy savings from our energy saving building program, and a couple other associated fees. When you see House Bill 5, since the time that I've been here, before we had the Budget Stabilization Reserve Fund, before we had the Capital Development Fund, you were primarily looking at general fund dollars. Now, as you look at House Bill 5, because we have the Capital Development Fund, you are primarily looking at capital development dollars. That's from our work during the 2019 session on House Bill 553, which was the IDEA Act, if members of this committee will remember. I think just about everybody was here during that. So when you look at House Bill 5, there's a number of different funding types, a number of different project types. We'll do a quick run through those, and then we've got a good amount of people here to speak about individual projects. And if it's okay with the chair, we'll leave the rest of the individual projects to questions. Committee can go through them as you wish. So first, when you're looking through the bill itself, you'll see a number of different project types. So for instance, you will see MR projects. These are major repair projects. You will see CD projects. These are capital development projects. You will see AO projects. These are authority only projects. And so when I'm thinking about major repair as opposed to capital development, I'm primarily thinking about, you know, repair projects, maintenance projects being major repair projects, and renovation add-ons or new builds as being capital development projects. Technically, I believe the way that we categorize those is if you have a project that is $2.5 million or under where you are doing maintenance or repairs, that's a major repair project, or construction of something that is less than $250,000. And if you have a project that you are doing that goes over the $2.5 million mark, or as a new construction goes over the $250,000 mark, then you are talking about a capital development project. When you are looking at AO projects, these are authority-only projects. What authority-only is not the state of Montana spending its state dollars. It is us giving permission to the entity to spend dollars that they have either already raised private dollars or giving them authority to go out and raise the private dollars. So a decent example of that would be the $92 million in the bill for the various nursing pieces, programs for the university system. That was a private donation from an individual. You see it in House Bill 5 because they are asking for our permission to spend that money to then construct that building, put together that program, et cetera. Additionally, you'll see a good amount of federal funding in the bill, and so a decent example of that would be if you looked at the Department of Military Affairs Billing Readiness and Innovation Campus, you're looking at $26.8 million coming from the Capital Development Fund, then leveraging $52 million of federal funding for a total project cost of $78 million, well, $78.8 million, Mr. Chairman. Additionally, in the bill, you will find operation and maintenance projects, again, from the IDEA Act in 2019, what we said was, in the future, whenever we build new, we're going to force these individuals to account for their ongoing maintenance when we're going through the project. And so as they're building, obviously, they're not spending that money for the operation and maintenance, but they have to account for it for the beginning, and then it gets rolled into their base as the project comes alive, as it were. That was because for a very long time, the state of Montana was building new buildings, not taking into account the ongoing maintenance, and the ongoing maintenance was stacking up rather significantly. So one of the more important parts of the legislature's work in this area over the last couple of years has been making sure that these folks account for that, and we take care of it up front so we don't end up running into a backlog of ongoing maintenance. Mr. Chairman, if you were to look at major repair projects in the bill, you'd be looking at 93 projects for a total of $91 million. If you were to look at capital development projects in the bill, you'd be looking at about 86 projects for a total of $1.007 million. A little bit of nuance there, again, being, say, in the capital development projects, the authority only. So there's about $260 million, give or take, of authority-only projects in the bill. That is, again, not the state of Montana putting down a dollar, but giving permission to the individuals, the university system, to spend a dollar that they have already privately raised, or giving them permission to go out and raise that dollar. So an example of the giving them the authority to go raise that dollar would be Gallatin College in the bill, which you will see funded at about $23 million coming from the state side, with the rest of the project, about $23 million, being in the bill and authority only, telling them that they have permission to go out and raise that money to construct that building. Mr. Chairman, with that, couple points from the process of House Bill 5. So House Bill 5's original incarnation had $113 million in it for the behavioral health initiative that the legislature was working on. That has been removed and has been attached to its policy bill. So although I still track that in my mind as being part of this conversation, you will notice that that is not in the bill anymore. It's not in the bill because the money was the idea was done away with. It's not in the bill because the policy bill came alive that Chairman Keenan from Section B is carrying, and so we took that money, which was being housed in House Bill 5 for the meantime, and put it in to its policy bill. Additionally, this committee has already seen House Bill 817, where we were looking to front load a little bit of the Department of Correction projects, try to get that out the door of the legislature a little bit faster, and as such, give those folks a little bit of extra time to get it up and running as quickly as possible. So you got that kind of interaction with House Bill 5. Mr. Chairman, House Bill 5 represents a historic opportunity to repair and replace infrastructure throughout the state of Montana. I'm grateful for the recommendation coming from the executive, grateful for the work of Section F, Appropriations, and the House of Representatives. And with that, I bring House Bill 5 to the Finance and Claims Committee. Mr. Chairman, I will sit for proponents, opponents. Look forward to the conversation and reserve to close.
Thank you, Representative. Proponents of the bill. Proponents. Representative Fitzpatrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. John Fitzpatrick, House District 77, Deer Lodge and Granite Counties. I passed out two documents for your consideration that deal with the correctional system, and I'm going to spend my time here at the podium talking about that a little bit. And then Mr. Catherman will go through and do his part of the bill. There's a memorandum there in front of you that I drafted to Chairman Jones, Representative Mercer, in his role as chairman of Section D, and Representative Hopkins in his capacity as chair of Section F. The discussion, basically, of bed capacity within the correctional system was a big part of both subsections' workload this year. And this particular memorandum was put together to kind of summarize the options that we had, what we thought could be put into effect immediately, and I want to talk a little bit about each of those as we go through the memo. The first item is 51 new community corrections beds. These are beds that are going to be picked up in units of 2, 3, 4, 5, wherever there happens to be some open slots in our community correctional facilities. This proposal was adopted by Section D and is contained in the base in that particular budget. The second item was a new pre-release center in Kalispell. I think this also originated initially in Section D. Language was put into House Bill 2 for what ended up to being a 90-bed facility. The department has funds in there to start this process. It has, however, been fairly tightly wrapped down with some requirements that Flathead County demonstrate that the facility has been fully permitted and is ready for the state to move forward with development. Apparently, there was some, shall we say, bad taste in some folks' mouths from the last session when an effort to start a drug court up there got pushed to the wayside and did not come through. And not wishing to repeat that, we've put some language in there limiting how this money will be spent. And if it isn't, if the county does not get the project permitted, then it will not move forward. The next item is the Unit D remodel at Montana State Prison. When this project actually was not anticipated to be a remodel, when the proposal, when we received House Bill 5, there was a large appropriation. I believe the initial number was $136 million to replace the low-side units. That's units A through C, which are built like a college dormitory and have been a disaster since they were built in the 1970s. They also included in that tearing down Unit D and replacing it with the low side. In the course of discussions, we rather quickly figured out that it would be a lot cheaper to remodel D and essentially gain 180 beds and go forward with the project as originally designed for low side and replace those units and pick up some additional capacity there. So you see the D remodel in this thing. Now, the D remodel was contained in House Bill 817, but it's not contained in House Bill 5. So I passed an amendment around that if you move forward with House Bill 5 and don't move forward with House Bill 17, then you need to put the Unit D remodel into House Bill 5. The next item was to reopen Unit F at Montana State Prison. This is basically, let me back up for a second. If you remodel Unit D, you don't have any new staffing requirements. That's already staffed. If you reopen MSP Unit 5, which basically requires the repair and maintenance of a water line and some related equipment, that will provide the prison with about 62 additional beds. This is an honor dormitory. These are folks that generally go out on parole within a very short time, or they're inmates that have a long track record of being at the prison but who are very low-security inmates. This unit, if reactivated, would generally be staffed with one person per shift. We're talking about 4 FTE. The next item is a new sexual offenders unit at START. This proposal emerged in the discussions with subsections D and also with F. The sexual offenders are a major management problem at Montana State Penitentiary. It is a population that is not liked by the inmates any more than they're liked by the general public. They are frequently involved in assaults, and moving them around to protect them, which is a requirement that the prison faces, is a persistent management problem, particularly with a facility that frankly doesn't have an open bed. Sexual offenders are very, very difficult to place anywhere. You can't take them to very few communities. The one place that said that we will build a sexual offenders unit and take these people for you is the START program based in Butte. The START program is located on the road between Anaconda and Warm Springs. It's perfectly situated. If we have problems with sexual offenders, they can be taken back to the prison very easily. This particular proposal is contained in House Bill 5, and it's way on the back of the bill, basically back on page 38, lines 26 to 39. It says appropriation for the fiscal year beginning July 1, 2024. There's appropriated $7.2 million from the general fund to the Department of Corrections to increase provider rates to allow for the construction of a special services unit. Okay, that's the sexual offenders unit. And there was a discussion on the floor about this thing. It was represented that this was an illegal appropriation. It is not an illegal appropriation. It's general fund. It is not capital development dollars. It was, the amendment was drafted by Ms. Johnson. It was reviewed and approved by Mr. Everts down in the LFC. The next item is units, or item six is the new low-side housing units. Funding for this project was contained in House Bill 5 and in House Bill 17, but this is a relatively slow project to develop, which is one of the reasons why we included it in 17 with the effort to try to move this project forward a little bit faster. And finally, there was a core civic contract, which we discussed. That money was placed in House Bill 2. This committee removed it from House Bill 2. The purpose of the core civic contract was really to give the prison more operating space and to some extent remove people from the county jails. If you're going to deal with a remodel of a building, you've got to have some place to put inmates, and in the absence of the core civic contract, that's going to be much more problematic. I would like to mention two other features in the bill for your consideration. On page 15, there's a $10 million appropriation to construct a water line serving, or reconstruct a water line serving Montana State Hospital. When this proposal was originally contained in House Bill 5, it just showed a number of $15.9 million. When it received the detail from DPHS, they listed a whole bunch of projects, and then they had a $10 million, more or less, what appeared to me to be a slush fund. In the event we see some additional projects that need some money, we would like $10 million. I moved to reduce that by $9 million in the committee. That amendment was accepted. I later learned that the that money was to repair the water line that runs between Anaconda and the state hospital. That water line was constructed in the late 1990s, and it was not done properly. And it's got a lot of leaks. It was never properly bedded. The DPHS contacted Deer Lodge County, asked them to file an application for ARPA funds. They prepared the grant application. Deer Lodge County filed it. It was rejected. But interestingly enough, they only put it for $3 million when they wanted the county to do the job. Now it's $10 million, now it's the state. We did put in a provision that they said that they could contract with the county if they chose. I don't think very seriously that the county will entertain that idea. I'll be happy to answer any questions, particularly about the prison and the housing situation that we face there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. For the proponents.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Russ Katherman, K-A-T-H-E-R-M-A-N, with the Architecture and Engineering Division, Department of Admin, here in support of the Governor's Long Range Building Program. It was my 14th session, so we witnessed this, recognize this as a big ask, but I only mentioned the 14th session just from having seen the backlog over a fair bit of time build up. And this proposal, as the both sponsors had mentioned, does make generational improvements to state facilities. So many thanks to the sponsors, the chairman of Section F, the whole Section F subcommittee, Senators Boldman, Senator Cuff, Senator Lang. Really appreciate their time. We spent a good solid week together. Diligently going through House Bill 5, all the requests, went project by project, and in respect to the committee's time, we don't have a lot of additional presentation materials today since these have all been heard in Section F, but we do have directors and others in support, as well as other from agencies here available to answer any questions. So, Mr. Chairman, really appreciate the opportunity this morning to present House Bill 5 to you.
For the proponents, please. For the proponents.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chairs, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Clayton Christian, C-H-R-I-S-T-I-A-N. I have the privilege to serve as Montana's Commissioner of Higher Education. I represent the university system. I want to thank Chair Hopkins and the subcommittee for their work reviewing a significant amount of projects for the MUS and their consideration of those, also staff, Katie Callen and others that have sort of muscled through the MUS projects over this session. We work closely over the interim with the governor, the governor's budget office, Mr. Catherman, his team at A&E, and we've been very supportive of the projects and appreciative of the projects that they put forward in House Bill 5. We think that the actions of the subcommittee and ultimately those actions taken in the House have put this bill in even a better place, and we respectfully ask for the support of this committee on behalf of the university system. Look for a due pass on House Bill 5. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. For the proponents.
Welcome. Mr. Chairman, I have a handout. May I pass that up?
Yeah, half to each side, and we'll...
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members. For the record, my name is Dave Williamson, W-I-L-L-I-A-M-S-O-N. I'm the chairman of the Southwest Montana Veterans Home Foundation. I represent trustees and members from six different Montana counties, including Beaverhead, Deer Lodge, Jefferson, Madison, Powell, and Silverbow. We support House Bill 5, particularly new Section 3, line 28 on page 12 and lines 1 and 2 on page 13. That's a DPHHS request for $5.25 million to complete the ongoing connector program. Some, if not all of you, have probably heard about this project. The first connector is currently under construction, utilizing funds allocated from the 67th legislature. That money is not enough to finish the other two connectors planned for construction due to inflation and rising costs of construction materials. If you look at the handout I provided, you will see different colored pieces on the architect's drawing. The purple is the community center. The red designates the fire lanes required by the Butte Fire Department, and the green designates the three connectors. The connector being constructed currently is shown on the far right nearest to the main fire lane. It will connect cottages 4 and 5. The other two will connect cottage 1 to cottage 2 and cottage 3 to cottage 4. The picture included in the handout shows the current connector under construction from back in mid-March. There has been substantial work completed since then, and estimates show completion sometime in May or early June. With approval of the $5.25 million, construction can begin on the other two connectors. Plans for those two have already been drawn and were included in the bidding process as alternate pieces, so construction could start as soon as the funding is available. What you don't see on the handout is probably the most important piece of the pie. That will be the retrofitting of all five cottages with fire suppression sprinkler systems in the attics of all the cottages. These sprinklers were not included in the original construction due to other accepted practices for fire suppression. However, CMS rules require the addition of the sprinkler systems because of what is considered to be a penetration of the existing buildings. This penetration is caused by the new construction of the connectors. Obviously, once completed, the cottages will be much safer for the veteran residents and staff working in each cottage. These connections will enhance the facility's ability to support the best veterans as best they can. The foundation strongly supports this section of House Bill 5 and requests the committee support it as well. With that, Mr. Chairman and committee, this concludes my testimony, and I will remain for any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Next proponent, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members, fellow veterans, and other citizens of Montana present today. My name is Bill Willing, spelled W-I-L-L-I-N-G. I'm a resident of Deer Lodge County and a combat wounded veteran with 38 years military service. I'm here today to testify as a Southwest Veterans Home Foundation trustee. I'll also be testifying as chairman of the Southwestern Veteran Home Site Selection Committee and as a prior chairman of the Montana Veterans Affairs Board on the current request for $5.25 million in House Bill 5 to finish the connectors for the Southwest Veterans Home. The connectors for the home have been in the original proposed plan since its inception. The Home with Connectors was presented to each of the communities and their leaders from the six Southwest counties who chose to participate in the Montana Legislative Designated Site Selection Process. The connectors were always displayed on the same large poster board showing the proposed design at all of the site selection committee meetings, which were rotated through the counties. It was also at all of the community presentations to the site selection committee when vying for the home to be located in their respective counties. The need for the connectors was identified from day one of the site selection process. Because of the identified benefits of the increased movement efficiency of the medical staff in patient care, movement of laundry, food, medical equipment, visitors, and patient movement, and the greatly reduced liability exposure to the environmental Montana weather conditions and hazards personnel would be exposed to without the connectors. Bottom line, the need for the connectors was not carried forward. But we're here today to ask for that additional funding for the completion of the corridors. The people impacted by this omission were not part of the decision to not include connectors in the contract for the home. We're now forced to ask the Montana legislature again to provide the critically needed $5.25 million to correct the omission to complete the basic veterans home package as envisioned and planned for, not only by the Montana counties, communities, and their citizens who submitted the proposals to have the facility, but also as envisioned by the 108,000 Montana veterans and their estimated 90,000 spouses who are eligible to reside in the home. Barring any questions, this concludes my testimony.
Thank you, sir. Further proponents, remind you to be brief. There's a lot of people yet to come behind you.
I'll be brief. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Chris Cotton, C-O-T-T-O-N, and I am the Southwest Montana Veterans Home Administrator. I'm here today to share the importance, to share with you the importance of the completion of the Connected Walkway Project at the Veterans Home under House Bill 5. Although there are many benefits of the walkway, I have focused on two main reasons: quality of life and safety. I started working at the Veterans Home a little over 2 years ago. I will be the first to admit, as a freshly retired knuckle-dragging Marine officer, I was totally ignorant of the functions of a skilled nursing facility. My understanding of these operations was limited to what I watched on TV, visiting family in nursing homes, and the occasional singing of Christmas carols as a kid. In my mind, I had the term rest home imprinted and expected to see geriatric folks sitting in a common room watching a black and white TV doing nothing. However, this could not be further from the truth. The environment that my staff and many other nursing homes provide is one of life that includes freedom, dignity, compassion, and the physical and emotional care that they need. These walkways allow the residents the ability to freely maneuver in between the buildings, to meet with their friends, to play cards, to watch a movie, or simply drink a cup of coffee together whenever they want. Do you remember when you got your driver's license as a teenager? Finally, you had a little bit of freedom. Freedom to go to the movies, freedom to hang out with your friends, freedom just to take a drive. Why? Because it felt good, and that freedom was important. This is exactly what it means to these men and women in a nursing home. Nobody ever wants to be in a nursing home, but yet here they are. These veterans deserve as much freedom and dignity as we can provide. This is just a small token of respect that we can add for them in their final days. In addition to providing freedom of movement to the residents, there is also an element of safety that must be addressed. During the winter months, the short days and the long nights open up opportunities for all types of hazard, ranging from bitter cold to vagrancy. These walkways allow the residents and the staff to safely transfer from cottage to cottage without the risk of slipping on a patch of ice, the uncomfortable feelings of the cold winter nights, and also providing a well-lit area away from potential criminals. In addition, a skilled nursing facility maintains many medications that include narcotics. As a facility, we always try to move more narcotics during the day, but it is just not feasible to do that all the time. The needs of a resident will cause movements of medications at night, and that will cause a nurse to have to maybe walk 150 yards in the dark at night with potential criminal threat out there.
Mr. Cotton,
yes.
You can wrap her up.
Sure. The facility was granted by the great state of Montana, and I would just ask that you continue to support it.
Thank you, Mr. Cotton. I am starting a clock, and I will let you know when you have about 15 seconds left.
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and the committee. My name is Brenna Anderson, and I am currently the Director of Operations for Eduro Healthcare. We are the current operator at the Southwest Montana Veterans Home, and I am here to support the connector project for the Veterans Home. I am born and raised in Montana and still currently reside in Butte. And as a healthcare provider and a citizen of Butte, I have followed the Southwest Montana Veterans Home project since the proposal came to fruition. So you can imagine my excitement when Eduro Healthcare was chosen to be the operator and I was to be the one to open the facility. It was during this time when the Veterans Home was being constructed that I truly came to know how much this project meant to veterans and their families, not just in Montana, but all across the country. This was going to be a place where veterans and their spouses alike could live out the rest of their lives in a small, private, comfortable, and safe home-like cottage-style setting where they could have the freedom to move about and reminisce and share their stories with other veterans and receive the quality care that they deserve. The cottage-style design has many advantages, but in Montana, with all of our different seasons, it makes it difficult for veterans and their families, as well as volunteers, to move between the cottages in a safe fashion. This has also been proven to be very difficult for our staff. Eduro Healthcare has also recently assumed the operations at the Eastern Montana Veterans Home in Glendive, Montana. That is not cottage style, and I can tell you that there is a distinct difference in the way our veterans at this home communicate and interact with each other, and also in the way that they do activities. As a healthcare provider, my personal goal is to provide the highest quality care for our veterans and for many of our veterans that enter Southwest Montana Veterans Home. This is their final stop. This is why it is so important for the Veterans Home to provide them the best experience, and these walkways will ensure that veterans and their families for many years to come can enjoy the home and everything it has to offer and share those things with other veterans located in another cottage. It has truly been an honor opening and operating the Southwest Montana Veterans Home for our veterans and for Montana. Thank you for your time.
Further proponents.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ray Beck, B-E-C-K. I have a handout with your permission, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, about a half each way. Go ahead, sir.
I represent the Yellowstone Conservation District. The Yellowstone Conservation District would like to ask for your support of Senator McGillivray's amendment to House Bill 5 to include startup funding for the Yellowstone Conservation Area project. That's a copy of which is being passed around. The total project includes 160 acres of open water, 140 acres of green space. The City of Billings has funding to complete the water storage portion, which will provide water to Billings and the surrounding area, backup water. The Yellowstone Conservation District, in partnership with the city, plans to develop the 140 acres surrounding the water storage area in the conservation area. This area will include wildland fire access by ground and air, protection of natural resources for current and future generations, establish biodiversity, including native plantings and wetlands, and a conservation education center educating visitors on natural resource protection, soil health, water conservation, watershed protection for clean, safe drinking water, plus recreation opportunities. Yellowstone CD would like to ask for your support for this amendment and this project. Thank you.
Thank you. Next proponent, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Chad Sedgwick, S-E-D-G-W-I-C-K. I'm a rancher from Yellowstone County, and I also chair the Yellowstone Conservation District. And I'm asking your support in the amendment to House Bill 5. Ray pretty well covered everything. I wanted to just reiterate that this is important for all of eastern Montana, not just Billings. And we've hired a part-time grant writer to explore other funding, and if we can get some help from you guys, we will. It will help further finding some other monies to go with it. So With that being said, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sedgwick. Further proponents.
Good morning. My name is Chris Kukulski. That's K-U-K-U-L-S-K-I. I'm the city administrator in Billings. I'll be brief. I just want to set the purpose and express appreciation for the forthcoming amendment from Senator McGilvery. First, in order to resolve a significant water storage problem that Billings has, we're going to be investing about $153 million into this project. So good news is we have enough water rights to handle a quarter million people, whether that's good news or bad news for Montana and Billings. The bad news, we only have water storage during summer months for 24 to 48 hours. How often does that happen? It happened to us with an oil spill in the Yellowstone, ice jams in the winter, and just last year with the flash flood, we had to notify everybody in the city that we had less than 48 hours of water. For homeowners, kind of a first world problem. For hospitals that serve all of central and eastern Montana, that was a big problem. So after this water storage facility is built, which we've been working on for over a decade, we'll have 40 days of water supply. So we'll kind of separate ourselves. Why, as I mentioned, not only health care as a regional service, the city of Billings literally provides fire service to the 45 square miles of the city and 42 square miles outside the city. So we are a regional fire provider, and this facility will be allowed for helicopters and others to pick up water for wildland interface fires in the region. So thank you. Thank you, Senator McGilvery, for your forthcoming amendment, and if permissible, I'm going to head back to Billings for a meeting here at 12:30. Thank you.
You may be excused, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Sheridan Johnson, S-H-E-R-I-D-A-N, here on behalf of the Montana Chamber of Commerce. We're in support of House Bill 5 because we think it's a good investment into Montana's infrastructure and our state's future, and in particular would support Senator McGilvery's amendment for the City of Billings and the Yellowstone Conservation District for the Yellowstone Conservation Area. You've heard about what this will create. We think it's a good way to create a multi-use facility out of this investment that the City of Billings is already undertaking and allow for more recreation opportunities. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Mr. Forstag.
Chairman, members of the committee, Sam Forstag, F-O-R-S-T-A-G, for the record, here in support of House Bill 5 on behalf of the Montana Coalition to Solve Homelessness. In particular, we're here in support of the grant funding that came up through the Section F subcommittee. I'd like to thank them for their work and for appropriations work honing and sharpening that program. This funding would help with infrastructure projects and capacity building at our homeless shelters around the state, where in every major city in our state, we've seen a 40% increase up to a 200 to 300% increase in places like Great Falls and Billings in the number of people seeking shelter that are unhoused. This funding, I'll add, in appropriations was, I'd say, sharpened to require a one-to-one private matching requirement, and we have worked with not only a subcommittee with the Appropriations Committee, but with folks in smaller communities in Glendive on the High Line to make sure that this funding would be is structured in such a way that it's available to our smaller communities and to make sure that those grants are spread out across the state and are helping communities and shelters that are struggling everywhere. Thank you for your time. I appreciate your support.
Thank you, Mr. Forstag. For the proponents, Ms. McGowan.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members. For the record, Erin McGowan, M-C-G-O-W-A-N. I represent a number of different community-based folks this session, but today I'm here in support of the homeless shelter funding on behalf of the HRDCs across the state. They very strongly support this measure. And in fact, their top two priorities leading into this session were work on homeless shelter funding, as well as work on behavioral health community-based funding. And I'd just like you to know, I think that, and I've heard quite a bit about it from them, I'd encourage for you to have those community-based discussions yourselves, but that connection between homeless issues as well as behavioral health, mental health substance abuse issues, is intricately tied. And I think that's part of the funding that is attached to this appropriation within House Bill 5 can go for some of those purposes too. But I think then that transition for these individuals to be able to become productive members of society and continue to work on their mental health and substance abuse issues is just critical. So thank you for looking at this. And I do encourage you to visit with your HRDCs if you have further question. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents, Mr. Elliott.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Clayton Elliott, ELL-IOTT, representing Montana Trout Unlimited. Happy to stand in support of House Bill 5 and the authority underneath it, as you see presented to you today. Again, want to thank the subcommittee, Section F. This rounds out our long-range planning work. But wanted to specifically talk about the FWP, Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Authority that you see here and offer our support. We had long discussion in subcommittee, so I won't belabor the point, but the programs you see here, future fisheries, community ponds, fish connectivity, Habitat Montana, the infrastructure for Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks are all critical investments. I just wanted to highlight one number because I think it's a really good explanation. In House Bill 6 and 7, we talked a lot about how these state funds for restoration work can really unlock a lot of other funds. Future fisheries, I think, is a marquee example where you're seeing, depending on the cycle, almost a, either a 5 to 6 to 1 match. So $1 future fisheries money relates to $5 to $6 by the time you amalgamate both private, federal, and other funding sources. So really great investments in terms of getting work out the door, improving irrigation, improving abandoned mine reclamation, and creating jobs in local communities and being good for Montana's fish and wildlife resources as well. And that's something that particularly hunters and anglers can support. The last thing I would just say, Mr. Marion with Wild Montana was unable to be here this morning, but he wanted to add his me too to supporting the authority in House Bill 5 as you see presented to you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Elliott. Further proponents.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Marcus Strange, STRANGE, representing the Montana Wildlife Federation, here today to support the excellent work of Section F and support the funding for Fish, Wildlife, and Parks in House Bill 5. We would like to thank the chair and the long-range planning committee for their amazing work that they did this year, and we hope you will give House Bill 5 a due pass. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents, please.
Ryan McCormick, representing the Montana Agricultural Experiment Station. I am here today asking for your support, the forthcoming amendment from Senator Mike Lang. Basically, this is an inflationary request. These projects for Montana Agricultural Experiment Station were approved in 2021. There were 7 requests put forth. One of them was funded at $856 a square foot, the rest of them at $500 a square foot. So the inflationary request was not fulfilled for 2023. Essentially, there's 5 chemistry and instrumentation labs spread across the state and 1 horticultural facility that will not be able to be constructed at $500 a square foot. So this amendment brings everything to $856. I sifted around through House Bill 5, and I don't see anything being built for $500 a square foot currently. So I ask for your support in getting these projects finished for the number one industry in our state for the main research and development arm. With that, I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McCormick. Mr. McCormick, before you leave, could you spell your last name for the record, please?
I apologize. McCormick.
Thank you very much. Further proponents.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Natalie Smitham, S-M-I-T-H-A-M. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the Department of Corrections. We are very appreciative of the work on this bill to date and very grateful for the projects within the bill that support the Department of Corrections. And with that, we stand in support of House Bill 5. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Smitham. Further proponents.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jim Salmonson, spelled S-A-L-M-O-N-S-E-N, and I'm the warden at the Montana State Prison, and I stand here in support of House Bill 5, and we'll be here for any questions.
Thank you, Warden. Further proponents?
Chair, members of the committee, Thomas Jodin, J-O-D-O-I-N. I'm the Deputy Director and General Counsel for the Montana League of Cities and Towns. We support House Bill 5, obviously important to keep these facilities operating and running in our cities and towns. And then more specifically, we do support Senator McGillivray's amendment to add $4 million in funding to the DNRC to pass through to the Yellowstone Conservation District and the City of Billings for their conservation and water project. I think everybody recognizes this has a benefit to the entire state as a regional facility, driving economic development and improving public safety in the region. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jodin. Further proponents, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Lieutenant Colonel Kurt Seger with the Montana Highway Patrol.
last name spelled S-A-G-E-R. We're here in support of House Bill 5 and specifically funding for the Boulder campus maintenance. When we received the Boulder campus transfer in 2021, it was a great addition to the Highway Patrol. Did, however, come with significant needs. The majority of the roofs need replaced. A bunch of the windows are not functional, and a lot of the interior of the building needs attention, floors, ceilings, so that we can use that space. The Boulder campus not only serves the Montana Highway Patrol, but also provides classroom space for local agencies, entities, the Law Enforcement Academy, and with these funding, we can expand the training facility that we have by improving the interior of the campus so that we can use that space. Currently, a bunch of the space is just not usable. The floors and ceilings are in disrepair, and a lot of the windows make portions of the building not usable at this time. So we ask for your support and urge to pass. I'll be here for questions if there are any. Thank you.
Thank you, Colonel Sagar. Further proponents?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, name is Justin Braun, last name B-R-A-U-N. Interim administrator at the Montana Law Enforcement Academy. MLEA has two items in House Bill 5. One is for a boiler replacement in our administration building. It's currently approximately 3 years past lifespan. Administration building houses our corrections and detention program classroom, as well as a peace officer standard and training office. That building goes down, risk damage to the building, and also affecting our training program. Second item in there is for inflationary spending for scenario building that was passed last legislative session. If that is not authorized, that project will completely come to a stop. We're currently at about the 65% design phase with architecture and engineering. So appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Mr. Kuntz. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Matt Kuntz, K-U-N-T-Z. I'm the executive director of NAMI Montana. We work for Montanans with mental health conditions and their families, and the people that we serve are serve throughout this bill. So we would ask for a due pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kuntz. Further proponents? Mr. Longcake.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Brad Longcake, L-O-N-G-C-A-K-E. I'm here on behalf of the Montana Petroleum Marketers and Convenience Store Association. I just simply want to be here to thank Senator Esp and everybody that works on these bills. They're obviously very challenging, lots of emotion, lots of back and forth, and I can assure you that Senator Esp has taken more time with me and my group than we probably should have really been allowed to. So I want to personally commend him for the hard work that he puts in and doing this, and doesn't take a lot of credit and is thankless on what he does for the state of Montana. And again, personally want to just make sure I let everybody know that he's probably one of the best chairmen I've worked with, and the state of Montana is very lucky to have him and the rest of you on his team to work on these issues. So
that's
with that,
about enough out of you.
Thank you, sir.
Further proponents.
Good morning, Chairman Esp, members of the committee. My name is Major General Pete Ronick, spelled H-R-O-N-E-K. I'm the Director of the Department of Military Affairs. I'm here in support of House Bill 5. I'd just like to thank Representative Hopkins and his committee for their great work in this, and also working along with Mr. Kafferman and the Governor's Office in developing a strong plan for the long-range building project. I'm here for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Major General. Further proponents, Director.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Charlie Brereton, for the record, B-R-E-R-E-T-O-N, Director of the Department of Public Health and Human Services. Stand here in strong support of House Bill 5. Grateful for the work of Section F, the House, and for your consideration as well. My staff and I are here and available for any questions. Thank you.
Further proponents.
Good morning, Chair Esp, members of the committee. Lena Havron, H-A-V-R-O-N. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. On behalf of the director, I stand in support of House Bill 5. Thanks, Section F Subcommittee and Chair Hopkins, for all the hard work. And thank you all for your thoughtful consideration. We also have staff available for questions.
Thank you very much. Further proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Mike Murolo, M-U-R-O-L-O, and I'm the Facilities Bureau Chief for the Montana Department of Transportation. I also want to thank the Long Range Subcommittee for all their hard work and this committee. I'm in support of House Bill 5 and MDT projects. I'm here to answer any questions if you have any. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents in the room? Further proponents, we have one online, I think. Katya. Is Mr. Simonson online?
Mr. Chair, we only have one pre-registered proponent. He is not online right now, but we have two people raising their hands, and I can promote them.
Promote them, please. Ms. Wolken, go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Cynthia Wolken, W-O-L-K-E-N. I'm the Deputy Director at the Montana Department of Corrections. And on behalf of our agency and Director Gukun, I just wanted to thank the committee and show our strong support for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wolken. Further proponents online? Ms. Schmidt.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Donna Schmidt, that's spelled S-C-H-M-I-D-T, and I would also like to thank the subcommittee and A&E. I am the proud business manager at the Montana School for the Deaf and Blind, and I stand in support of the governor's budget as allocated in House Bill 5. Our projects listed in House Bill 5 are all about the safety of our students, staff, and visitors, creating a designated bus loop, adding a fire sprinkler system to the Mustang Center gym, and adding security cameras on the campus will be a great investment for the state of Montana. I will be online for any questions if needed. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Thank you, Ms. Schmidt. Are there any other out there, Katya?
Mr. Chair, we only have a number of informational witnesses on Zoom currently. Mr. Chair.
All righty, thank you. Any opponents in the room to House Bill 5? Opponents? Seeing none. Informational witnesses in the room on House Bill 5. Welcome, Mr. Wadsworth.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it's Terry Wadsworth, Executive Director for the Petroleum Tank Release Compensation Board. The board wanted to thank Chairman S. for his recent amendment to House Bill 5 and encourage the passing of that particular amendment. And the board wanted to thank Senator Esp, with regards to the long hours that he was working with the stakeholders. So thank you, Mr. Chairman, for all that work.
Thank you, Mr. Wadsworth. Further informational witnesses.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, for the record, Cheryl Cohen, C-O-H-E-N, with the Housing Division, Department of Commerce, available for questions about the emergency shelter program in the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Further informational witnesses.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Jason Harlow, H-A-R-L-O-W, with the Governor's Budget Office. I'm available for any questions on the fiscal note or the bill. Thank you.
Further informational witnesses.
Good morning. Welcome. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Katie Callen, C-A-L-L-O-N, with the Legislative Fiscal Division. With your permission, Mr. Chair, I have a handout, if I may.
Yes, please.
So as this goes around, this is just a handout to provide some information about the funding in House Bill 5. It kind of goes through the project types, the number of projects, the amount of funding. It also, I think of interest on page 2, provides a fund balance table for the major repairs fund, and on page 3, a fund balance table for the capital development fund. If you look at the far right column, for both of those fund balance tables, it gives you what is projected projected for the beginning fund balance for the 2025 biennium, the anticipated revenues with the various sources that the chair went through earlier in his opening remarks, and then the projected expenditures, and then ending with the anticipated ending fund balance. I guess the only thing to note on that is that obviously there are a lot of moving pieces. There's some other bills that have capital development funds in particular. So this kind of just captures where we are at this time. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Callen. Outstanding job as usual. Further information to witnesses.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Kim Aiken, A-I-K-E-N, Chief Financial Officer for the Department of Public Health and Human Services, available for any questions.
Further information to witnesses.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. William Evo, E-V as in Victor O, Chief Healthcare Facilities Officer for DPHHS, also available for any questions this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Evo. Further informational witnesses in the room? Seeing none, let's get them lined up online and promote the first one, Katya. Mr. Thomas.
Mr. Chairman, Nate Thomas, T-H-O-M-A-S, Chief Financial Officer for Department of Justice, if you have any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas. Mr. Frampton.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Wyatt Frampton, spelled F-R-A-M-P-T-O-N. I'm the Deputy Division Administrator for the Forestry and Trust Lands Division at the Montana Department of Natural Resources and Conservation. Here for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Frampton. Appreciate all of you coming in case there's questions. Mr. Swanson.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Steve Swanson, S-W-A-N-S-O-N, with the Department of Revenue, available for any questions regarding the liquor warehouse project. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Mr. Judah.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Greg Judah. That's J-U-D-A. I'm the director of the Montana Veterinary Diagnostic Lab with the Department of Livestock, and I'm here to answer any questions you may have regarding the Veterinary Diagnostic Lab building construction.
Thank you, Mr. Judah. Mr. Bostrom.
Good morning, Chair. Mark Bostrom, spelled B-O-S-T-R-O-M. I'm administrator of the Conservation Resource Development Division at DNRC. Here for any questions you might have that relate to this division. Chair asked.
Thank you, sir. Further informational witnesses. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bardell Mangum, M-A-N-G-U-M. I'm the design and construction supervisor for Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, and will be available online for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Mangan. Any further informational witnesses?
Nobody else is raising their hands, Mr. Chair.
Seeing none, we will move on to questions from the committee. Senator McGilvray.
Mr. Chair, I have a question for Warden Samuelson.
Warden, please.
Mr. Chair, Senator.
Warden, I want to go back to what Representative Fitzpatrick handed out at the beginning of the meeting today, and I just want to get your take on Unit F and how, assuming this bill passes and the money is available for the reopening of Unit F, what do you think is the time horizon for that unit to be opened up and taking inmates in there?
Mr. Chair, Senator, with passing of this bill and the work to be completed, I have no timetable on that. That's one roadblock. The other roadblock is staffing. We are trending in the right direction, getting more staff in. As we progress up with staff, we will be able to open that building up.
Follow up. So is your hindrance staff or just getting it contracted and done?
It's a combination. Getting the contracted work to be completed, that has to be done first. But then we also have to have the staff to utilized to be able to open up, operate the building.
To another question for you. So we passed House Bill 426, which provides a pre-parole screening to get some inmates that are 14 months from parole moved out into the community corrections. What's your timeline on getting that screening committee up and running to be able to implement that program?
Can I defer that to Deputy Director Wolkin, because I don't know what that would be?
Yes.
Ms. Wolkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator. I think our timeline, we're grateful for that resource, and we're looking forward to getting that process set up as soon as possible, and hoping that that will help with some of the bottlenecks that we have in our system.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So can you give me an estimate of how many inmates you think would be potentially eligible once that program is up and running? How many inmates do you think you can move out of the prison into community corrections? Because we did supply 50-plus more beds, and we also have a transitional living that will, based on the numbers I'm getting, could open up another 100 or so beds. Can you tell me how many of your population would you think be eligible to move out of the prison into these community corrections bed based on that screening panel?
Senator, I think it's, I wouldn't want to give you any incorrect information, but I would say, you know, we do have that chunk of population that is parole upon completion of some type of program, and working with our community corrections partners and the Board of Pardons and Parole and our own staff to get folks out. It's our intention that if people are safely and appropriately able to transition through that program and through TL, that we want to get as many of those out as possible.
One more follow-up.
One more, and then I have one too.
Okay.
Senator.
Can you give me I don't want to pin you down on a number, but just a ballpark. I have been told there's maybe 300 in that position of 14 months out from parole. Do you have just even a general idea of, is that a third of that population that would be eligible for those screening committees to move out? Two-thirds? What would be your basic thought?
Mr. Chair, Senator McGilvery, so in that bill 426, it gives us some administrative rulemaking to sit down and kind of flesh out what parameters we might put around that. But I would say we definitely are able to and intend on utilizing all of that additional capacity, those 50 beds, and with the transitional efficiencies and community corrections money, setting up a program that helps us move folks through that as well. So I would say, I don't know, anywhere between 50 and a couple of hundred, I think, would be the population that we're looking at.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And then, Ms. Wolkin, you said as soon as possible. Could you define as soon as possible in a range of months?
Senator, I believe that we would, you know, sit down, obviously, once the money is appropriated in House Bill 2, that we would sit down and aim for that effective date. So July 1 would be our aim.
So that's, Ms. Wolkin, just further follow up, that you would anticipate to begin to transition people July 1?
Senator, that would be our goal. We definitely want to move quickly as well.
Great, thank you. Further questions on anything in the bill? Yes, I have one of Mr. Catherman.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Catherman, so on the Butte Veterans Home projects and the requirement for sprinkler systems, in some jurisdictions, the walkway is left this far away from the building, and then they use foam or something in between, and so there is no breach of the envelope. So there is no requirement for additional sprinklers or modifications to the building. Can you speak to that? Is that something that you could recommend or could have recommended?
Mr. Chairman, I would need to get back with our architecture firm. The status of the project right now is we had an enough funding from the last session to go ahead and bid and contract for the fire lane that was needed around to the backside of the facility, because once we connected the cottages together, that required another bit of construction to allow the fire department to get around. And one of the connectors is already under construction. We bid as part of that package the two remaining ones that are currently in House Bill 5, and those are ready to go. Those have been all through CMS review compliance. So it would, at this point, would need a pretty substantial change if we could do that. But I would need to get with our architect firm to confirm that.
Well, Mr. Kathman, the change would be a change in the drawing on paper and the bidding of the project.
Yes.
It might be a lot less substantial in having to sprinkler every one of those cottages financially.
Yes, sir. We can certainly look into that for you and get that back to you as soon as I can.
And it would provide for safety. I mean, there's a little window between the two buildings that if you don't
part of the
connect
part of the,
them,
that sorry.
Weather could come in, but that can be dealt with. It's dealt with in other jurisdictions in similar situations.
If I may, Chairman, the current design, the services, they're all heated and lit, so the electrical and the mechanical all comes from these other components. So I don't know what creating that gap between the connectors and the current facility might do to those systems, or may impose upon us from a building code standpoint. But I can certainly give our architect firm a call and get you an answer on that.
Well, all right. Thank you, sir. I guess an unheated walkway is better than no walkway at all if it's out of the weather. Further questions of any of the projects or language in House Bill 5?
Mr. Chair, one
more. Senator McGillivray.
This would be for Mr. Sedgwick. He's in the room.
Maybe Mr. Sedgwick, are you still here?
From the Yellowstone County Conservation District.
He might be out in the hall. Let's see.
Mr. Beck would be available, too. So I'll, right. I'll just direct my question to him. Mr. Beck, I think it was the city administrator, Mr. Kulkowski, that talked about the water supply, the constraints that we're having in Billings with respect to how much water is available if we get into a jam. Can you just repeat that to me? I kind of got lost, and I just wanted you to share that with the committee.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, yes, and he had to take off for another meeting, but as I remember it, right now they're down to 2 days, which is a real critical thing for the hospital, being regional hospitals and that sort of thing. Once this is developed, it'll be, I believe he said, 40 days of reserve.
All right, thank you.
Further questions? I guess for for the sponsor. Representative Hopkins, if we took some of the projects that are in 5 that has to do with the Capitol Complex and put them in a different bill, do you have any angst with doing that?
Mr. Chairman, that would break my little heart. No, I'm kidding. I have heard that conversation. I think that that's a completely rational thing to do and would absolutely be in favor of the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
All righty. Thank you. Letters from home here. Anybody else have questions? I don't want to cut this short because this is important. It's $1 billion here, so... If you have questions, this is the time to ask them. Seeing none, Representative, would you care to close on your bill?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My last chance to abuse a podium on House Bill 5. I'll go ahead and take it. Thank you for asking that question. I was going to cover that in the close. House Bill 5 is pretty regularly a holding silo for certain appropriations that are waiting for a policy bill in different sessions. One of the reasons that we do that is a lot of the dollars that go into House Bill 5 can go for ongoing appropriations, so it gives us time to work everything out. And so there's that 113 for the behavioral health side that went to its policy bill. There is the 75 in House Bill 5 for the Rose Project for Capitol Complex that I think was waiting for that kind of a policy bill. So that's completely normal. A couple of quick pitches and then a reasonably short close. I see you guys have a pretty decent board for the day, but not the scariest that I've seen from you. First, just pointing back to that little flag that we planted in the middle of the room when we started talking about Sections F's work around coal dollars in the state of Montana, natural resource dollars in the state of Montana, and what they do for the state of Montana. I'm not going to make you guys listen to the entire spiel again, but just wanted to point out once again, as you take a look at these projects through the bill, projects and the other bill, take into consideration what natural resource dollars are doing for the state of Montana. It's a really big deal. Next thing that I would point out, since this is going to be my last time here talking about House Bill 5, going back to the 2019 legislative session again, what we used to have is all departments kind of individually being siloed when it came to their project requests that they would bring to the legislature. They didn't communicate terribly well with each other, and because of that, they were always fighting against one another, and part of the work from my vice chair on Section F, my former chair on Section F, as well as a former senator from Butte, Montana, America, was to create a more thorough, fleshed-out facilities assessment dealio for all state-owned infrastructure in the state of Montana. That made them do a much more thorough listing of everything that they need. We created a far better and more thorough way of looking at the lifespan of the buildings and the materials that were used in the construction of those buildings for everything throughout the state of Montana. And so now when they come forward with their list of project requests, it's night and day from where we were. So going out into the future, I hope definitely hope that returning folks will keep them going down that lane, kind of like when we talk about House Bill 10 between these gigantic projects or trying to slim it down to build towards functionality. Similarly here with the facilities assessment and the way that we do things now with bills like House Bill 5, it's really important going out into the future. So I hope that you will all keep them on the straight and narrow road on that front. Mr. Chairman, as I said, this is a historic opportunity, investment in repairing and replacing infrastructure across the state of Montana. It's better drinking water, it's better irrigation, it's better education, more modern education facilities, and not for nothing, but keeping folks' children warm during the winters and cool during the summers when they're in those educational facilities. Kind of hard to retain information when you're freezing or when you're cooking, if you know what I mean. This will be safer working conditions for our correctional staff across the state of Montana, more modernized for our correctional staff across the state of Montana. This will be letting individuals get in touch with the kind of care that they need. Right, left, up, down, ABBA. This is a cheat code for good stuff throughout the state of Montana for the people of Montana. With that, Mr. Chairman, thank you for willing to entertain all of the Section F work. Thank you for listening to my ramblings on all of the Section F work. I would ask for a due pass for House Bill 5, and I would thank the committee for its time.
Thank you, Representative. Before I close the hearing on this bill, I would just like to thank our members of that subcommittee. I guess only one of you are here at this moment, but I thank them all, and I thank all of you that were here as informational and that testified on this bill. I know it takes time, but we appreciate you being available for questions. With that, I close the hearing on House Bill 5.
Yeah.
All right, committee, we will come back to order. We'll begin with House Bill 29. Representative, you may open on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm here today. I'm Jennifer Carlson, C-A-R-L-S-O-N, from House District 69, and I'm here today with House Bill 29, which should be pretty familiar. Your body just passed this out 49-0. This is a bill that will seek to end the commitment, the involuntary commitment of people with Alzheimer's, traumatic brain injury, and other forms of dementia from being committed to the state hospital if they do not have a primary diagnosis of mental illness. This bill is from the interim committee from Children, Family, Health, and Human Services. We worked on this bill for quite a while. As a matter of fact, when we had started working on this bill, which came obviously as a study bill, one of the problems that had come to our attention during the 21 session is this involuntary commitment of people who do not have a primary diagnosis of mental illness into the state mental hospital. It's not a safe placement for people in that capacity. And during the time that the committee was contemplating this study, there were four patient deaths of elderly residents in the Montana State Hospital that were needless deaths. During that time, also, the Montana State Hospital lost its CMS certification because of long-term violations of federal requirements and in jeopardies and other issues that were taking place at that hospital that made the facility such that even the federal government stopped paying for it. Those events made this bill even more timely for our committee. What this bill does, in a nutshell, is it says that by July 2025, we will no longer place people on involuntary commitments to the Montana State Hospital who have Alzheimer's or dementia or traumatic brain injury without a primary diagnosis of mental illness. That is currently illegal anyway in the law, and that law is actually located in here. I know we're here to talk about money, but I wanted to tell you that why we came to this this bill, which does also include a transition review team to make sure these things happen, is that a priority of government is caring for vulnerable people. I'm sure we all have different levels of what we think our obligation is, but I would hope that we can agree that elderly Montanans who cannot care for themselves should be on the top of our list. So when we wrote this bill, we knew it was going to cost money. That's why on page 12, there's a discussion of the cost of this. However, when we wrote the bill, Montana State Hospital still had CMS certification, which meant that they were still receiving Medicaid reimbursements. They are not receiving Medicaid reimbursements, and every dollar spent at the Montana State Hospital is state general fund money. In a community care placement, which is what the law currently requires for these people, they would be receiving a federal match for at least 65% of the cost of care, depending on what category of Medicaid the individual was in. So there is no way to make it more expensive to care for these people anywhere in Montana. But keeping that in mind, we did not discount the fact that this would cost money. I don't believe it's going to cost as much money as is stated. But even if it does, it's the right thing to do. We should not be having newspaper reports of needless deaths of elderly people because they are in an inappropriate placement. So I'm sure there's people behind me that want to talk about this bill, and I will probably just respond to some of the things they say when they're done speaking, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Keep in mind this bill is on its hearing about money, so we're going to talk about the money only. Proponents for House Bill 29.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Claire Marshall. That's M-A-R-S-H-A-L-L. I'm with the Alzheimer's Association Montana chapter. The Alzheimer's Association represents the 22,000 Montanans living with Alzheimer's as well as their family caregivers. I'm going to be honest, I'm not a financial professional, but I think I, along with several other people, are really surprised by this fiscal note and a little disappointed in it. I want to thank the sponsor for bringing this bill and also for what she said about the state hospital is the most expensive place for people living with dementia. Most often, it is the least appropriate, and it is certainly the most restrictive. Even if it was the cheapest option, it's not the right thing to do. And I think this bill is so important for people living with dementia to give them the dignity they deserve, the care and treatment they deserve, and it's also going to save money in the long run. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Marshall. For the proponents, Mr. Kuntz.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Matt Kuntz, K-U-N-T-Z. I'm the executive director of NAMI Montana, and we work with Montanans who live with mental health conditions and their families. And the drive from a mental health condition to Alzheimer's and dementia is unfortunately a very short one, and a lot of our people take it. And for years, we've known that Montana State Hospital is not the right place for people with Alzheimer's. And this past, the interim Representative Carlson and others did a lot of work on it. And I guess I'll just say, we know that this needs to be fixed. There's no question. And you've got a lot of institutional money bills that you're facing that this has to get fixed in. So does it count here for the money, or does it count in that bill? If you have three different bills where this money's supposed to get charged, I would just ask the committee to think a little bit broader than this bill, because every institutional funding bill needs to have this in it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kuntz. For the proponents.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tal Golden, T-A-L-G-O-L-D-I-N. I am the supervising attorney for Education and Employment and Benefits at Disability Rights Montana. Disability Rights Montana is the federally mandated protection and advocacy system for Montana. As part of our federal mandate, we are obligated to monitor and investigate allegations of abuse and neglect in facilities, including the state hospital. Very quickly, I want to say people who pose no risk of harm to self or others, who have dementia or Alzheimer's, have no business being in the state hospital. It is the most restrictive setting. It is the most expensive setting. It is the wrong place for these folks to be. It comes at a significant cost to the state. It's important also to recognize that the state has an obligation under the Americans with Disabilities Act to not invest in and continue to implement systems of care that place people at an unnecessary risk of institutionalization or unnecessarily place people in an institutionalization.
So I'm going to reel you back into the money in the bill.
And to refocus on the money, the cost of Olmstead litigation from the U.S. Department of Justice is an expensive cost of the state. So again, we'd ask the commission, the committee, to consider that cost as well in making sure that folks are not unnecessarily institutionalized at the state hospital. With that, I thank Mr. Chair for
the
committee. Mr. Chair, I do have another meeting, if I may be excused. Unless there are any questions at this point.
Don't see any questions. Go ahead.
Thank you.
For the proponents, welcome back.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Margaret MacDonald, capital M-A-C, capital D-O-N-A-L-D, with Big Sky 55 Plus, a group of Montanans, 55 and older. I would just call your attention to the sponsor's rebuttal on the fiscal note, where the point is made on page one that the assumption in the fiscal note is that placing 24 individuals who meet the conditions of the bill assumes that if the bill were not passed, no ongoing expenses would be incurred for these individuals. And we're talking about daily expenses at Montana State Hospital. So I would just encourage you to take that into consideration. This is going to cost us either here or there, and it's an important bill. It's a bill that came out of the deliberations of the interim committee, and I would hope you would pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McDonald. Further proponents?
Mr. Chairman, Mike Batista with the AARP Montana asked that I also note that he supports this bill, too, that the AARP.
We got her on the record. Thank you. Further proponents? Ms. Hughes.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Rose Hughes, H-U-G-H-E-S. I'm the executive director of the Montana Healthcare Association. We represent long-term care facilities, nursing homes, and assisted living facilities and memory care units, all of whom provide quite a bit of dementia care and care to Alzheimer people with Alzheimer's. I'll talk to the fiscal impact, as I'm supposed to. What I'd say first and foremost is that any setting that isn't the state hospital where these individuals might likely be served is going to be less expensive than the state hospital. There was a report by Alvarez and Marcel, who are helping the department with the state facilities, and particularly with Montana State Hospital. But the report went to the Part B subcommittee, actually. But it showed the costs at the state hospital at about $1,000 a day. And it showed the costs at the Montana Mental Health Nursing Care Center at close to $600 a day. The fiscal note assumes that that people who would move from the state hospital because of this legislation would go only to or all to the Montana Mental Health Nursing Care Center, which is not necessarily the intent of the legislation. The intent of the legislation is to get them out closer to their homes and into community settings. But even if they were moved to Lewistown, that's a difference between $1,000 a day and a little bit less than $600 a day. Also, in terms of community settings, it's really difficult right now for, I think, any of us to imagine that there's going to be a community setting readily available in a nursing home or whatever. But I think the new piece of information is that there will be those kinds of settings. Just within the last week, I had a conversation with a company out of Utah, which is...
So, Ms. Hughes, we got to get you back on the fiscal note. We're not on the policy.
Mr. Chairman, the point I'm making is that you're going to find that there are going to be services available, people willing to come and do this service at less cost than either of those two state institutions, that there is an interest and there are folks who are doing this successfully, filling this niche in other states, and they're looking at Montana as a possibility. So I do think the fiscal impact, if you'll be able to get these people into community settings at much less cost than what you're doing now, and it will be more appropriate settings for those people.
Thank you. Thank Point you. Taken. Further proponents? Further proponents? Have any online? Let's see. Katya, is there anyone online on this bill?
Mr. Chair, there's nobody online to testify on this bill currently, Mr. Chair.
Okay, any opponents in the room? Opponents. Informational witnesses. Mr. Hermanson.
Good morning, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Gene Hermanson. I am the Medicaid Chief Financial Officer for the Montana Department of Public Health and Human Services, and I can answer questions regarding our fiscal note, and with your permission, Chair, I'd like to provide a handout that provides some additional context on the development of our fiscal note.
You may pass half of it each way. Further informational witnesses.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Angie Carter, C-A-R-T-E-R, and I'm the Legislative Branch's financial manager. I'm here to speak on the Legislative Branch's portion of the fiscal note that funds the legislators for the Transition Review Committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Carter. Any further informational witnesses? Seeing none, questions from the committee? Questions? Seeing none, Representative, care to close on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I just want to be exceptionally brief. Literally everything I was going to say in my close was already mentioned, so I'm not going to waste your time. But I did want to just reiterate that thanks to the work of the legislature, the nursing home reimbursement rate is going up. And I believe that's going to help with some of the situations where we are currently lacking some community placements. One of the reasons that people end up in this situation is they don't have another placement. So I believe that the work appropriations has already done on that reimbursement rate for nursing homes is going to significantly help with placements. But I would urge you to pass this bill out of here. This is not just because good policy, but I believe it will save money. And the task force or the transition review team that's included in this bill is going to make sure that going forward we don't end up in another instance where we are spending way too much money for something we can be doing in a much better way for a much lower cost. And I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. This closes the hearing on House Bill 29.
And you're going to like it.
Let's just stand at ease a moment. Senate Finance and Claims come back to order. We are going to move to House Bill 174. Representative Seekin-Crowe, you may open on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. It's an honor to be here. I've never been in front of this committee before. My name is Carrie Seekins-Crowe, that's S-E-E-K-I-N-S, and Crowe is C-R-O-W-E. I represent House District 43 in Billings Heights. And before you, you have the bill that is absolutely the worst of all worlds, because Republicans can't stand it because of the fiscal note, and Democrats can't stand it because we're talking about people in jail. So with that being said, here we are smack dab in reality that people are in jail and it costs money. And so the facilities that we're talking about here happen to be the county facilities, the jails. I think it was back in 2015. I may need to be corrected on this a little bit later. The rate was set at $69 and some change. I think it's gone to $69.63 to house the DOC hold. Now, what DOC hold is those folks who have actually been sentenced, but they need to be held. Sometimes just they're going to be released into the least restrictive, to have the ability to be, let's just say the least restrictive place possible. That could be the community corrections or the facility itself. So they're being held in the facility for a period of time. Could be one day, it could be a little bit longer than that as well, but they are actually at this point state prisoners. Okay, they are no longer in the facility because they are in the county jails, or the county prisoners at that point. And so this rate was $69.63. Well, as you all know, because I know that there's nobody who comes in here asking for less money, the rate now that has been the compromise rate that our favorite House of our Representative amended this bill to is right now 10% less than the Core Civic. I know I'm not supposed to say a name, but that's what it says in the bill. The Core Civic facility, it'd be 10% less than whatever that rate is, or $82 would be the least amount that they would get. The $82 is a good compromise. It does not cover the full amount. However, the reason why it's a good compromise is because there was a lot of people who said, well, we shouldn't be covering the fixed costs. We should only be covering the variable costs. So at this point, it does allow for the fixed cost to be covered, some of the variable costs to be covered as well for holding the prisoners at the county facilities at this time. And at this time, I'm going to go ahead and have a seat. I've got some great proponents coming up to explain to you a little bit more why this is important. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Proponents on the bill, remember we're talking about the fiscal impact on the state of Montana.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Nanette Gilbertson, G-I-L-B-E-R-T-S-O-N, here representing the Montana Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association. And I will do my level best to stay on the fiscal note and the impact to the state of Montana. However, I don't think we can talk about this issue without talking about the impact to your local taxpayers. We appreciate this bill. We support House Bill 174 wholeheartedly, and we're very thankful to the sponsor for bringing it forward. This is an issue we've been working on since the 2015 session. We've been back every session trying to adjust the rate that was the capped rate that was put in place in 2015. We were not successful, and here we are again this session. I do want to just let you know where this bill started and where we're at right now and what you have in front of you. So the original language of the bill set the rate at actual costs, and that is based on, what was done in 2011 through a partnership with the Department of Corrections, Sheriffs, the Sheriffs Association, and the Montana Association of Counties, in which there was a cost formula that was created so sheriffs and detention facilities could be paid actual costs. In 2015, that went away and a capped rate was put in language in House Bill 2 of $69 a day. So we came back with this bill and it was actual costs. Those range from $90 to $130 per day per inmate. And the fiscal note was quite high. It was above $3 million. And DOC said it would require one FTE in order to go out and audit those actual costs and ensure that everything was above board. So we said, all right, actual cost is not feasible. State of Montana can't afford it. Let's create a different system. We came back, we amended the bill in House Judiciary to a capped and tiered rate system based on bed capacity, ranging from, I think it was $84, $88, and $92 per day per inmate based on the size of the facility. That came out of House Judiciary, still had a fiscal note over $2 million, and we went to House Appropriations. House Appropriations sat on this bill for quite a while, contemplated what's in House Bill 2.
Ms. Gilbertson, let's just get to the meat of the fiscal note.
Yes, sir.
Is it accurate?
We do believe it is accurate, sir. Thank you for bringing me back on track. The bill you have before you sets the rate at the rate of Crossroads Correctional Facility less 10% or $82, whichever is higher. We think it's accurate. It is not going to cover the entire cost for local detention facilities to house the inmates for which the state is responsible, but it gets us a lot closer than the $69.63, which is currently in House Bill 2. We would encourage you to acknowledge that this bill has taken numerous haircuts and pass this bill along just as it is before you. Thank you.
Thank you. For the proponents, Ms. Alley.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Karen Alley, A-L-L-E-Y. I'm Associate General Counsel for the Montana Association of Counties. And Mr. Chair, just to remind myself, I have the fiscal note right looking at me. I will say that, as the previous proponent said, this shift up to $82 a day moves the dial for county local detention facilities. It doesn't make them 100% whole. However, by increasing the rate of reimbursement that the Department of Corrections provides for counties when counties are holding DOC inmates, that decreases the loss to counties. I believe the fiscal note indicates that's the dollar amount for counties is approximately $1.5 million. What that actually stands for is the amount of money. It's a decreased loss. So with that, without getting too far into the weeds on policy, I just want to highlight that that is why we're at the microphone supporting this bill and would ask that it be passed as it has been presented. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Alley. Further proponents of the bill. Is there anyone online on this bill? Katya.
Mr. Chair, there is nobody who pre-registered to testify. There are a couple of people on Zoom right now. I'm not sure if they're here to testify on this bill or not. So as of right now, nobody, Mr. Chair.
Are any of you online to testify on House Bill 174? Raise your hand if you are. Mr. Thomas.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm an informational witness on House Bill 174 from the Department of Justice.
Well, since you're there, we're going to just take your informational testimony.
Okay. Yep. Nate Thomas, THOMAS, Chief Financial Officer, if you have any questions on our piece of the fiscal note.
Thank you. So we'll move on to opponents on the bill. Opponents for the bill. Seeing none, informational witnesses. Welcome again.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Natalie Smitham. That's S-M-I-T-H-A-M, the Chief Financial Officer for the Department of Corrections, here to answer any questions you may have on our portion of the fiscal note. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. And further informational witnesses? Seeing none. Questions from the committee? Questions from the committee? Senator Pope.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm tempted for Ms. Alley.
Ms. Alley.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Ms. Alley, thank you.
Mr. Chair, Senator.
Just a quick question. I'm not sure maybe you can answer this in detail, but generally speaking, when you talk to your member counties, I mean, how do they cover the cost that isn't being reimbursed properly?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pope, great question. That those costs are covered from the local taxpayer, so it comes out of the county's general fund, essentially, for the cost of a it's the cost to run the detention facility.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further question, Senator McGilvray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the sponsor.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator.
Thank you. So assuming this bill passes and the new rate per day is used, what do you see the impact in, say, Yellowstone County? Does this free up more jail space in our county, or just reimburse the county more money?
Mr. Chair and Senator, in Yellowstone County, right now we're holding between 40 and 50. That's the average a day. So basically be reimbursed for the numbers that are there. So it actually help out the county a lot, and then the burden would not be as much on the taxpayers in the county. These are state prisoners. These are no longer county prisoners. However, in other counties, if I may, the counties are not forced to hold these prisoners once they became state prisoners. And having worked with DOC these last couple of years, they are looking for a little bit more space. They are looking to have a place that they can put some of these folks. And so this could open up space, especially in Great Falls or some of the other jails that have, say, 3, 4, 5 available beds, because they would be compensated at a much fairer rate at that point. We know that Bozeman actually for a lot of years refused any of these prisoners at that point. And I was actually talking to DOC, and they wanted the rate increase so that they could work better with the sheriffs.
So just follow up. I don't know if I got the answer. I think maybe a yes, no. So you don't see in Yellowstone County any change in the number of state inmates in the Yellowstone County jail because of this fee change?
Senator, Mr. Chair, no, because we don't have the space at this time.
All right.
Further question? Seeing none. Representative, care to close?
Thank you for this opportunity to present this really important rate change to y'all. Once again, counties do not have to hold prisoners. And DOC is looking for places that they could put them. Some of these counties might only have 3 or 4 beds. Some of them, like Great Falls, has the capacity for a lot more. We are looking, in fact, you guys said no to the Arizona solution, but I'm not talking, this is not 240 beds, but this could be 50, 60, 70 beds at a time if we go up in this rate. Right now, the counties are shouldering this. And we go to the taxpayers every single time and we say, we'd like this mill levy. And so they're thinking that it's to fund either an upgrade to the facility, more equipment, and right now this money's haven't going to hold the state prisoner. So we're asking the state to pay more of their share of the holding these the DOC holds right now. So thank you very much, and I'm looking forward to a green vote from y'all.
This closes the hearing on House Bill 174. We're going to take a little break. We have to change staff positions around. So let's just take a 10-minute break to allow them to change. We'll be right back with the last bill of the day. We're in recess.
Please note, we're back.
I like that. Members of Finance and Claims, about 15 seconds, we're going to come back to order. Senate Finance and Claims will come back out of recess. We're going to open the hearing on House Bill 396. Representative, you may open on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nara Hastings, N-A-A-R-A-H-H-A-S-T-I-N-G-S, and I represent House District 50 in Billings. This is my first time in front of you guys. So, actually, I thought I was done with the hearings, but here I am. So, let's see. Section 1 of HB 396 ensures that non-public school students cannot be denied access to partial enrollment. This change in HB 396 is to provide uniformity across school districts, giving assurance to families that if they want to take advantage of public school resources, for instance, like a science lab or maybe even the digital academy, they can do that while providing the schools the resources they need. The public school unions, thanks to those guys back there, worked with me to amend the bill ensuring A&B funding will be provided to the public schools when non-public school students enroll on a part-time basis, thus the fiscal note. However, you might hear that the fiscal note may not even be needed. I will reserve for opponents' informational. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Any proponents of this bill that passed 47-1?
Good morning again.
One is not in this committee. Proponents, please.
Good morning again, Mr. Chair. Good to see you again this morning. My name and committee members, my name is Dylan Klapmeyer. Last name is spelled K-L-A-P-M-E-I-E-R, and I'm Governor Gianforte's education advisor. The governor supports House Bill 396 and really appreciates Representative Hastings bringing it forward this session. House Bill 396 complements other bills this session, such as House Bill 203 and 214 related to open enrollment, and that districts already offer partial enrollment and they receive funding for it. This bill just standardizes those policies and makes it available in every community. In addition to being good policy that puts family in the driver's seat of their child's education, it's in the best financial interest of the state to further encourage cooperation between public, independent, and homeschool families. Sticking to the fiscal note, I want to start by saying that these are very rough estimates, as we have no way of knowing how many students are going to partially enroll and for how many classes. I also want to address some of the numbers that are not in the fiscal note in front of you. We know that there are roughly 15,000 students, or 10% of the student population in Montana, who are not enrolled in public schools. However, each of these parents are paying taxes to support their local schools without receiving any state, local, or federal aid. If every one of those students were to enroll full-time in public school, they'd be entitled to their roughly $13,000 each in combined local, state, and federal education aid. So while the fiscal note may seem somewhat large, if we consider the taxes paid by the parents and the roughly $200 million in aid that is not spent on these students, the true fiscal impact becomes more clear. For these fiscal reasons and the fact that it's just good policy, I urge the committee's support. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Further proponents? Mr. Melton.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Lance Melton with the Montana School Boards Association. My last name is spelled M-E-L-T-O-N, and I'm here testifying on behalf of the Coalition of Advocates for Montana's Public Schools. Mr. Chairman, do you mind if I hand out the annotated fiscal note? May not get around the room much, but if I could start over here and then just testify quickly.
That'd be great.
Okay.
It's one of the highlights of my second half of the session is your two fiscal notes I've gotten so far. Appreciate them.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the highlight here is that I don't believe that there is any fiscal impact, and we'd be comfortable if there was no fiscal impact committed here. This is funded under K-12 base aid. We've been advising our members since 2005 that part-time enrollees are required to be admitted. And at the bottom of the first page of the fiscal note, where I've identified here, and we helped draft the original language here in Senate Bill 359 in the 2005 session with Senator Story, is that 20-5-102, which is in the bill, says that trustees shall assign and admit a resident child who's between 5 and 19 and who's otherwise qualified to be admitted to the school. There's nothing in Title 20 that makes a full-time pupil any more otherwise qualified than a part-time pupil. And, in fact, there's a specific provision in 20-9-311 subsection 4 that puts a part-time enrollee on the same level footing as a full-time student. 29-311 subsection 4 allows part-time enrollment beginning at one course. So, to the extent that you get worried about the fiscal impact, I tell you that I think that all the kids who want to come are already coming, and school districts are already enrolling them. I'm unaware of a single instance when a school district has denied a resident part-time pupil from enrolling in the school. I have those key points identified on page 3 of the fiscal note to recap the comments within here, and then on the back page there's a couple of technical notes that address serving kids with disabilities, both those who are qualified for services under IDEA and Section 504. Both of those federal laws make no distinction between a full-time and a part-time student, so let me answer those technical notes. Free appropriate public education is guaranteed, and a school district is obligated to provide it according to the parent's level of engagement. So a part-time student is entitled to free appropriate public education, just like a full-time student. And that's at the direction and with the collaboration of the parent or guardian. Same thing for Section 504, and I've got a link there with a quote. In general, all school-age children who are individuals with disabilities, as defined by 504 or IDEA, are entitled to FAPE. That's off of the U.S. Department of Education's website. So I'm available for any questions you may have and appreciate the chance to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Melton. Further proponents? Further proponents of the bill? Mr. Kriegel.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Henry Kriegel. That's K-R-I-E-G-E-L. With Americans for Prosperity, we stand in support of HB 396 for the reasons stated earlier. We believe that foremost is the needs of the students, and part-time students should be able to attend public schools, and the funding in the fiscal note is appropriate. So for these reasons, we stand in support of the bill. Urge
Thank you, Mr. Kriegel. Further proponents of the bill? Is there any online, Katya?
Mr. Chair, there is nobody online to testify on this bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any opponents in the room? Opponents? Seeing none, informational witnesses. Welcome back.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paul Taylor, T-A-Y-L-O-R. I'm a budget analyst with the Office of Public Instruction and may be able to help with this fiscal note. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. Further informational witnesses? Seeing none, questions from the committee? Vice Chair Glim.
Mr. Chairman, for Mr. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, Senator Glim.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Taylor, so you, of course, heard the discussion there about the fiscal note, and that's what we're most interested in. What do you think the risk would be if we said just to do within existing resources?
Mr. Chair, Senator Glim, yes, I've had discourse about this particular fiscal note multiple times throughout the session. I've heard a lot of the same kind of comments. A methodology was chosen at the beginning of this bill was drafted. It is also written onto this fiscal note in assumption number 3. Near the bottom, it says this number could certainly be more or less, but there is no data available for determining how many students would take advantage of this bill. I would make the recommendation that if there is a true belief that the fiscal note is in error, and I have to admit, I have a lot to do with writing these and drafting these fiscal notes, but it's not only my effort that goes into this. These are vetted also through the Office of Budget and Program Planning. I would say that if there is a true belief that this thing is in error, that there should be a request to have a fiscal note redrafted.
Thank you.
Further questions, Senator Flowers?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for Mr. Melton, please.
Mr. Melton.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Flowers.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Melton, if I understood your testimony, you said there will be zero impact from this, zero fiscal impact from this, because the students that are likely to take advantage of this are already taking advantage of this because of existing law. So if existing law allows for this and there's no fiscal impact, why do we need the bill?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Flowers, I actually think the bill improves things a bit because you have to know Title 20 pretty well. So when you look in there and it says otherwise qualified, so 25-101 says that school board has to allow a resident pupil to enroll and become admitted and assigned to a school when they're between the ages of 5 and 19 and how many angels dance on the head of a pin are otherwise qualified. You got to look throughout the entirety of Title 20. You don't have to look far if you know it. You look at the funding method under 29.311, and there it is. But what this does now is it puts it in a single place. So it raises the profile, makes it more specific, and includes it right in the section where parents likely to look to find out if they can get in.
Thank you.
Further questions? Seeing none, Representative, would you care to close on your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much. Thanks to the ideas from and the collaboration with OPI, advocacy groups like you just heard from, my colleagues in the Senate and the House, and parental input, our public schools are innovating in incredible ways, and HB 396 ensures all students and families have access to those opportunities. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. This closes the hearing on House Bill 396. Members of the committee, we're going to do a little bit of executive now if we can. You want to start with this one? Or start wherever you want.
Sure, we can do that. Mr. Chairman, I move do concur on House Bill 396, this one that we just heard by Representative Hastings, require the trustees to admit resident children on a part-time basis. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. You've heard the motion. Vice Chair Ellis, you have your proxies in order.
I'm getting it.
All right.
Okay.
Let's try a voice vote on this one. Senator Fuller.
Mr. Chair, I apologize. I was distracted. What is the bill, the motion?
House Bill 396. We just closed the hearing on it. Seeing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Proxies.
Senators Solomon, Bartel, Lenz, Lang, Wagner, all vote aye by proxy.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Lynch votes aye by proxy. I think that's it.
Motion carries unanimously. House Bill 396 has been concurred in Finance and Claims. It will go to third reading.
Mr. Chairman, I move do concur on House Bill 29. This was the second bill we heard this morning. This was by Representative Carlson, an act generally revising laws regarding to involuntary commitment of individuals with Alzheimer's and dementia. Mr. Chairman.
Any discussion on the bill? Senator Pope.
Mr. Chair, I think this is an important bill to move forward. I really don't understand the fiscal note. I mean, I don't know how, if you're moving folks from an expensive place to a less expensive place, we start incurring all kinds of dollars. But I'll leave that. But I think the principle of it is really important as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Pope. Senator Glenn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just address that. The assumption in the fiscal note is that as you move people out, new people are coming into the state hospital, so you don't see that reduction. That's the only caveat.
Further discussion? Seeing none, shall we try a voice vote? All those in favor of House Bill 29 be concurred in, say aye.
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 Opposed, no.
Senator Solomon, Senator Lenz, Senator Bogner, all vote aye by proxy.
I got everybody.
And the motion carries unanimously. House Bill 29 has been concurred in finance and claims. It will go to third reading.
Mr. Chairman, I move to concur on House Bill 174. This was by Representative Seekins Crow, and this was the cost for jails to be $82 a day. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Vice Chair Glimm. Any discussion on the bill? See no discussion.
Chair. Mr. Chair, I missed the hearing. I apologize to the committee for that. Certainly have seen this bill multiple times. I think it's a one-size-fits-all, and that's truly not how jails are, their costs are. So I'll be opposing.
Any further discussion? Roll call vote.
Vice Chair Glimm?
Yes.
Vice Chair Ellis?
No.
Senator Solomon?
Yes, by proxy.
Senator McGilvery?
Yes.
Senator Boldman?
No.
Senator Bartel?
Yes.
Senator Mandeville?
Yes.
Senator Morgeau?
No.
Senator Lenz?
Yes, by proxy.
Senator Lang?
Yes.
Senator Lynch?
No.
Senator Bogner?
Yes, by proxy.
Senator Cuff?
Yes.
Senator Flowers?
No.
Senator Fuller?
Yes.
Senator Vance?
Yes.
Senator Pope?
No.
Senator Wellborn? Yes. Chairman Esp?
Yes.
13 votes yes, 6 votes no.
House Bill 174 has been concurred in Senate Finance and Claims. It will go to third reading.
I understand that.
We have one more general bill that we'll probably have to do this afternoon. It was Senator Mercer's, or Representative Mercer's bill that he was getting an amendment prepared. I think he's got that underway. We will try to deal with it this afternoon. We're going to get 3 bills off the floor this afternoon that we also hear this afternoon. When we have how many scheduled, Joe? We have 4 scheduled, so we'll get 3 more.
Mr. Chairman, do those have to be turned around and right back to the floor?
If we amend them, they have to be, but...
To the floor today, I mean.
No. They have to be on the floor on Monday if we amend them.
They have to go back
second. Yeah.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
We have the option to vote those all down on the floor so we don't have to come back.
Yes, we do.
Okay. And I just want to make sure I know that.
You in the House all heard the senator from Bozeman make a suggestion, and I, in a weak moment, agreed. But any other discussion? We're keeping up with our workload. I'm losing my voice, but the workload's going fine. So seeing no further business, meeting's adjourned.